Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Technology has radically changed the way we live. On one hand, many aspects of our world are more efficient, cheaper, and faster because of technology. On the other hand, technology adds complexity to our lives, and keeping up with the latest devices and applications can take effort. Joining us to talk about trends in technology and some ideas for the tech geek in your life is Cape Cod Technology Council's Vice President Bert Jackson. Good morning, Bert.
Good morning, Mindy.
And Chris Faubert, Cape Cod Times tech columnist. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
All right, so since we're rapidly approaching the holidays here, let's start out with some tech gift ideas. Wearable tech is becoming more and more popular. I guess some examples of that are like some of these fitness bracelets and smart watches. And those fitness bracelets are pretty hot right now.
Yes, they are. One of the great things, Nike has some products in that line. And they integrate with your smartphone, and you can keep track of all sorts of fitness activities with that. And then you can share it with your friends on Facebook.
Mm. Chris, I want to ask you about these fitness bracelets. There's different versions, just like with the phones. And, you know, do I get the bracelet one? Do I get the one that clips on? Are the reviews, when you go online and you look at the reviews of things, I mean, what do you have to keep in mind when you're looking at that? Are they accurate?
Well, the product is the same. Carried across other products, in that you're paying for the Nike, you're paying for the name. Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind dropping $300 on a bracelet that monitors your vital conditions when you run and how much calories you have burned and et cetera, then you're good. But mm-hmm. there's other products out
like
there.
Fitbit is cheaper.
I would say, or Fitbug, mm-hmm. Even cheaper. It's only $49. Mm. And they do the same thing. They just don't do it with a nice, splashy logo.
Right, yeah. What do you think about reviews online when you look? I mean, I look at them and I think, I'm going to get this. And then I get to some of the bad ones and I go, oh, maybe not. And then you get away. How many, if there's 25 good ones and one bad one, you go, okay, you got one bad. You know, I mean, do you have to sort of look at how many are bad and how many are good?
Well, I think that you have to read them. You can't just go by the thumbs up, thumbs down.
Right, you got to read what's wrong with them.
Because some people expect something unrealistic from a product, and they'll complain when they don't get it, and that will affect your mm-hmm. opinion of the review.
Right, and I think if you look at restaurant reviews as a baseline, people are much more likely to complain than say something mm-hmm. nice.
That's true.
What do they have? They say you have to have 10 nice things to counter one bad thing. Mm-hmm. What I look for when I'm looking at reviews is I look for trends. Mm-hmm. So if there is a series of bad reviews and they're all saying the same thing, then that's going to give me a heads up that maybe I need to watch out for this.
All right, gotcha. What about smartwatches?
Smartwatches are getting there, but most of the time the smartwatch is going to integrate with your smartphone. Mm-hmm. So there aren't a lot of products out there yet for the smartwatch that is going to be a standalone product. Mm-hmm. There haven't been a lot of products out there yet for that.
Right. I'm not a fan of the smartwatch. I don't think that the tech is there yet. I don't think that there's enough app support. I don't think it's worth spending the money on them. However, let me qualify that. I am a fan of the remote display products like Pebble. You know, it's not a smartwatch. Mm-hmm. It's basically a remote display for your smart device. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your notifications, caller ID, SMS text messaging, that all appears on this little screen on your mm-hmm. wrist. It's relatively inexpensive. I think it's only $149. And it does what it does very well. So, for instance, and we were talking earlier about how technology has started to conform to our needs rather than mm-hmm. us to it. And this is a perfect example of that, because the it's not a smartwatch, but basically the Pebble, let's call it that, allows you to discreetly check your phone without anyone being aware that you're checking your phone, so you don't commit faux pas at mm-hmm. dinner or in a restaurant or what have you. Mm-hmm. And that is a great example of the technology starting to conform to our needs rather than the opposite, don't you think?
I agree completely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Our toll-free number, 866-999-4626. We'd love to know what you're looking at as far as tech gift ideas. Maybe you can help me out with my list, since I'm not not that up on all the techie stuff. 866-999-4626. And hit the number 5. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. I will tell you, though, I did shock my husband a couple of years ago. He knows more about the tech stuff than I do. And I went into this store and I said, I don't know what to get. And the guy said, this Apple TV,
Sure.
So maybe you could describe it. You can, get movies and watch shows and things. So I got him that. Never in a million years would he think that I would buy him something like that, because I had never heard of it, didn't know what it was. So, you know, this one. So I need some help, folks. If you want to give me an idea for this year, and Bob, if you're listening, turn off the radio. 866-999-4626. Hit the number 5. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So speaking of wearable tech, whatever happened to Google Glass? A year ago, it was in the news everywhere, but suddenly we're not hearing much about it. And for listeners who are not familiar with Google Glass, somebody describe it.
It's very similar to the Pebble in that it's a device that interfaces with another smart device, although it does have some limited processing power of its own. And essentially, it's a pair of glasses with a camera and microphone built into it.
Okay.
You can record video, you can take pictures, but it's more than that because it has a heads-up display so that when you look up while wearing it, it projects the screen of your device, or it, rather, extends the screen of your device to your own vision wirelessly, which allows you, in theory, I qualify that because a lot of people who, you know, really got excited about this and spent the $1,500
a lot of money
to buy one realized that they got more use out of their smartphone as a smartphone than they did out of Google Glass. Plus, there's the whole hostility issue. You know, people don't like to see you walk into a restaurant or a show or anywhere, really, wearing those glasses because they don't know whether you're recording them.
That is correct.
Yeah, exactly. The GoPro camera, another fun piece of technology. Are you familiar with it?
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Yes, I love the GoPro. Well, being a musician, there are shots where they've clipped the GoPro to the end of a guitar.
Yeah.
And you can see, so it seems that the neck of the guitar is stationary while the guitarist moves around. There's great possibilities with it. For those who don't know, the GoPro is a very rugged video camera, and it's designed for capturing motion in a variety of situations. If you go to their website, there's a number of mounts you can get for it. We were just traveling recently, and I saw somebody had one mounted to the top of their rental car as they were driving around because they wanted to shoot the scenery of where they were.
That's cool.
Yeah, you can. I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but there's a special drone that you can get that the GoPro camera attaches to, so you can fly the drone around and take videos of your neighborhood.
Yeah. You can put it in a little case, you know, so you can put it on the end of your skateboard or your surfboard, or you can put it on your head.
Yes.
I mean, you can really, and you can speed up or, you know, do all kinds of fun things with the video, right?
Well, there's a wireless component to it where you can control the camera and you can do some, I think, some basic editing with your smart device.
Yeah,
yes, with your smart device.
Exactly.
There's a fun viral video out with the videographer was doing some work with his GoPro, and a seagull grabbed it while it was running, and he went flying. The seagull went flying with the camera running and dropped it, you know, some mile away or something.
But did he find it?
Because he did find it. He did find it. Yes, he did find it.
That's some good video. All right, so let's talk about the drones. This is a new tech trend, and we're not just talking about for the military or delivery of Amazon packages. Anyone can purchase and fly a drone. So tell us what's available and how they might be useful.
You want to take that?
I'll start, sure. Well, a drone, you've probably seen, it looks like a little helicopter with four blades on it. It looks like a toy. And it can move around. There's some different configurations, but that seems to be the basic configuration. And you can control it remotely. They can travel pretty far at this point. And yes, there is the thought that Amazon is going to be using drones with GPS technology to deliver packages.
Can I just say, I think that sounds kind of crazy.
Well,
I'm just thinking, can you imagine? It's like the Jetsons.
Yes. Well, the FAA thinks it's kind of crazy, too. The FAA is, I think, scratching their heads trying to figure out what are we going to do with this.
Yeah.
My understanding is that the current law says you've got to keep your drones under 400 feet so that they're out of commercial and typical airspace. But there is a drone out there specifically for the GoPro camera where you can attach the GoPro to the drone and fly it around. And there's a fellow up in Provincetown who has a device similar to this, and he's been shooting some amazing shots of Provincetown, you know, shots above the monument and seeing, you know, the bay. It's great. It's a great tool.
Yeah, but it's a lot cheaper than hiring somebody to bring you up and get those aerial shots.
Oh, sure. The more professional drone, where is it here? It's the the DJI Phantom for GoPro, it's $480.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the GoPro camera is anywhere between $200 and $400. So, you know, for less than $1,000, you can have a very professional solution. So if you are a real estate broker, you can use this to shoot property. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of applications for that.
What do you think about the drones, Chris?
Come with their own insurance policy, most of them.
They do come with an insurance policy?
Well, sort of. Most of them are equipped with GPS, mm-hmm. and most of them are smart devices. So, for instance, the Phantom that he was talking about, it doesn't take a pilot to pilot it. Mm-hmm. They're a very simple interface. But if it gets away from you, and that's happened. In fact, it's been in the news recently. One of them got away from an operator who was filming a concert in Sydney, Australia, and the device ended up on the train tracks on the Sydney Bridge.
Oh, dear.
And the driver of the train stopped the train 50 feet from the device because he thought it was a bomb.
Mm. Yeah, so, see, that's the thing I was thinking when you were saying they have to fly under 400 feet. I'm not trusting everybody's going to keep that under 400 feet. You know, there might be some people who will, but then some people who won't.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like we've got some conversations that need to happen before we get too many of these things out there, right?
Whenever there's new technology that comes on board, there's going to be the legislation and the regulation of that technology is usually a little bit behind the curve.
Well, the technology itself, I think, maybe is going to stay ahead of it this time around. The device that crashed onto the bridge apparently was first generation tech, and the most recent generations of these drones now are GPS aware, and if they lose connection to the controller, they'll automatically and safely return to where they were launched from.
Mm.
So I'm not so sure the government's going to have to make too many rules.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So when I think of drone, I of course think of like robots and things as well. Are these all flying devices, or do they do other things?
Well, they have sewer drones in New York City that take cameras down, and I think there's actually one that has a ultrasound.
Really?
Yeah, and they use that to examine pipes where they think there might be a crack. NASA's working on a variety of different drones that will eventually someday go up in space. I mean, the whole point of autonomous devices is to provide services that man doesn't have to do. So I think that we're going to see a lot more drones in the future.
Yeah, now that you say that, I was thinking, we had an issue a while back where we had to have somebody come and, you know, you got the sewer pipes, and they did. They stuck this little thing down in there that showed all the pictures. You could see everything that was clogging or where the clogs and everything were. And I mean, it was a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Point. We're talking about trends in technology with Cape Cod Technology Council's Vice President Bert Jackson and Chris Boots-Faubert, Cape Cod Times tech columnist. Our toll-free number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. You hit the number 5, and that'll bring you right into the program, or you can shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Like to know what you're using in your house, what tech are you using in your home, your car, or on your body, the fitness things and things like that. Or if you have thoughts on some hot trends, some things that are on the list for the tech person on your list, give us a call and let us know that. All right, let's talk about tech gifts for the younger set. What tech is out there age appropriate for preschool or elementary school kids? What's the hot thing happening there?
A tablet.
Tablet.
I think a couple of different companies have ones that are essentially targeted toward kids. But the interesting thing about them, though, is that they'll start with this, and because it's an Android-based tablet, next year when they're no longer interested in Dora the Explorer, their parents can remove that software and download something else that they are interested in. So it's going to be something that sticks with them for a while.
Mm. Yeah. I know. I was surprised because I was thinking, you know, a couple of years ago, my nephew had, and he was young, you know, had a tablet. I thought, what could he possibly be doing on it? But there's a lot of educational games that that you can get, and you know, really helps them with the spelling and the learning, you know, the counting and all of that sort of thing.
I'm not sure how I feel about that. A lot of, you know, what they call progressive school districts in California now are moving away from textbooks and toward the tablets, using those very applications as the way they teach in the class. And I don't know. I like the way we did it when I was a kid.
I think a blended learning approach is probably the best way to go. But there's no doubt when you see a young person who gets a tablet in their hand, they intuitively know what to do. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So parents out there, if you leave your tablet around, your kids are going to find it, and they're going to find out things about it that you wish they didn't.
Yes. So. But, you know, and then also, too, you can't figure something else. Never mind calling these tech lines. Ask your kids. They know how to work these. I mean, it's amazing and how quickly. The only bad thing I will say, though, is I feel like you got to limit the time because they are just, you know, their heads are down into these phones and tablets, and they never look up.
It's not just kids.
Yeah, that's true. That is absolutely true. But we can control the kids more than we can control the adults in our lives, right?
There was a friend of mine who had a term where she talked about technology natives and technology immigrants. Mm-hmm. And those of us who are at least our generation,
right.
And I don't know about your generation, Chris, but probably so, are technology immigrants because when we grew up, there were no computers.
This didn't exist.
There were no, my first experience with a computer was a deck 10 at UNH using punch cards and Fortran. So now that the young folks today who are, God, the guy's working on my house. He was born in 1982 and he's in his 30s.
Yeah.
These are people who grew up with the technology and they have a much more innate capability of dealing with it.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't we had rotary phones. Right? There was no such thing as answering machines you missed the TV show. That was it. It wasn't on again. Kids now go, what? They just can't even imagine a world.
You had to wait for the rerun 3 months later.
Yeah. As Dan's saying, some of us have enough tech in our lives and have downgraded to a dumb phone. So you have a dumb phone instead of a smartphone.
Well, then the government can't track you.
Yes.
Part of the method to his madness, I guess. Another area that we're seeing a lot of this is it used to be that home entertainment consisted of television and just television when we were kids, but then cable connections came along. Now home entertainment technology has changed rapidly in the last few years. Many people stream music, TV, movies, internet. How is technology streamlining how people get and watch media?
Just giving them choice.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Something they didn't have before, the ability to schedule their viewing around their schedule rather than the broadcast schedule.
Right. You mentioned the Apple TV earlier, and there's the Apple TV and there's other devices that attach to your TV like the Roku.
Mm-hmm.
And what these devices essentially do, what they have in common is that you can, if you have a Netflix account, you can stream your Netflix videos right to your TV through an HDMI connection. There's also a number of other services out there that stream content through there. There's Hulu. If you're a baseball fan or a sports fan of any kind, you can get the MLB, Major League Soccer, all those kinds of streaming services are out there. So it provides you a real window into a myriad of opportunities, and all you need is an internet connection. Mm-hmm. You don't need a cable connection to use this.
Yeah.
If you have an Apple TV, one added benefit you get from that is that it becomes part of your Apple environment so that if you've purchased media through the iTunes store, for example, your movies can be streamed through the Apple TV. So anything that you bought and watched on your computer, you can also watch through your Apple TV online.
Chris, do you see in the future any kind of, I know Apple's very territorial and you have to have all your Apple devices go together. And if you bring something else into the mix, it may not work with Apple. Down the line, do we think that'll change that you can mix and match some of these applications and things? Or?
With Apple, it's anyone's guess. They've lost the guiding light, as it were, for their company. Mm. And now I think they're relying on the different bits of tech that he predicted, but didn't produce yet. So I think they have products to come out with over the next couple of years. But as far as the future goes, who can say?
I
think that other technology companies are stepping in very quickly, maybe even lurching into that realm. Microsoft is a perfect example. They no longer are satisfied with being your game console. They want to be the entertainment center in your living room, and they want everything that's in that living room to connect through their device. That's the future.
All right, Bruce is giving us a call from Marston's Mills. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good.
I had a couple of things. One is, you might not think it was a new thing, but I got a smartphone last month from Republic Wireless in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And they've invented a technology that by default automatically uses Wi-Fi.
Hmm.
The key thing is you can get unlimited everything on a smartphone for less than I was paying for a service plan for a flip phone.
Wow.
So that's a... just came out in November.
Wow, that's good to know.
Thing.
Okay, good. What was the other thing?
The other thing is for television, if anybody's finding their Comcast bill getting a little expensive or wherever their cable wireless is, cable service is, well, there's a service called Aerial out of Boston that gives you broadcast television over the
internet. Say that again. Gives you broadcast television over the internet. Is that what you said?
Right. So aside from watching on-demand things, you can watch the 10 o'clock news at 10 o'clock live on all the Boston stations.
Wow.
And it's very inexpensive, $8 or $12 a month.
Well, Bruce, those are good tips. Appreciate
those
that.
New technologies.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for that. That's the thing. As we go along, more and more choices, right? I mean,
well, voice over IP, it's a natural fit for use in mobile phones. But I'm not so sure that company invented it.
Yeah.
Skype is available for every smartphone that exists now, I think.
Right, yes.
And in fact, the Xbox One that I now have in my living room has Skype on it.
Right.
Chris, you have a special interest in gaming, and the latest gaming consoles like Xbox and PlayStation are broadening their applications to include non-gaming media, right?
Yes, very much so.
So tell us what's new. I mean, I have to say, I don't play any of those games, so I'm not real familiar, but I know my daughter used to have a PlayStation, then she had an Xbox, and I mean, you have to constantly upgrade, and of course the games are constantly changing. You want to get the newest and latest, right?
Well, up to a point. I don't think you have to upgrade the console so much as the games. And freemium gaming has now discovered the console market, so we're seeing a lot more microtransaction-based games eking their way onto that platform, and that's going to be interesting because for the last 20 years, the industry is the industry has controlled the price of gaming. You go to the store. 5 years ago, the game cost $59.99. You go to the store today, it costs $59.99. That's because the game industry sets that price. But now they're seeing competition from industries that don't normally compete on the platforms they compete on, and they don't like it because it's going to force them to start bringing their prices down. Now they're talking, though, about going all digital. So you'll no longer – you remember what happened to Blockbuster Video?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that the industry plans on doing that to GameStop.
Interesting. So you won't have to buy the games. You'll just be able to get them digitally.
And Microsoft already has the technology in place to share those games. One of the criticisms that people have made about digital over physical copies, what if I want to loan the game to a friend of mine? Mm-hmm. If it's digital, I can't. Well, Microsoft has developed a technology so that you can, to a limited extent. Apparently, their idea of fair is you designate friends and family, and there's a small list of people that can play your games. All they have to do is have the right password.
Wow. Hmm. That's right. So, and that will affect, obviously, the pricing?
It should.
Yeah.
That's not necessary to say it will, but I think it should.
We're talking about trends in technology with Chris Boots-Faber, Cape Cod Times tech columnist, and Cape Cod Technology Council's Vice President Bert Jackson. If you have questions for us or comments or thoughts on some of the trends you're seeing, give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626, and hit the number 5 to get into the program, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So what are some of the latest things? I mean, if you're a parent and you're thinking, you know, your kids are into Xbox or PlayStation, I mean, how do you even know what to buy?
Well, there's plenty available, but a lot of the tech is stuff that I'm not sure kids should be using in the first place. I don't think any child under the age of 10 should be allowed anywhere near a gaming console unsupervised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people seem to forget it's a network-connected device. And depending upon the application they run, they could end up talking to a stranger.
Mm.
And maybe I'm a little paranoid. Actually, I think I'm a lot paranoid. But being a father, you know, there are things you don't want your kids to be exposed to. And there are certain behavior, particularly in video games, that really, you know, my kids not be exposed to for as long as possible.
Some of them are pretty violent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I realize that. I'm saying do as I say, not as I do, because I like those violent games. I play those violent games, but I don't necessarily want my daughter to run around, you know, fragging people in Battlefield 4. And I don't want to hear the language.
But do we have ratings on the games, don't we?
Sure we do, but they don't really work.
They don't. Why not?
Because there's nothing to force you to follow them.
No, but they will alert a parent, correct?
I mean, if the parent has any participation in the process of actually selecting and purchasing the game, it will. In an ideal world, the stores that sell the games will enforce that rating. And I hate to do this, but I'll tell you this. I'm not a fan of Walmart, but it is an ethical company, and they do enforce those ratings. Mm-hmm. And GameStop is another company who, if you come in and you're obviously under 17 and you try to buy M-rated game, they're just going to say, no, come back with your parents.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know, right? All right. Now, we've been talking about tablets, which have been around for a while. Still a great tech gift for someone because they're versatile and portable. And now we even have like the smaller ones. So if you're looking for a gift for the techie in your life, do you think a tablet is a good starting place? If this is, you know, maybe somebody be, you know, maybe little, we talked about them might being okay for some of the younger set. Is there anything new in the tablet world that's worth noting?
I don't know that. I'll be honest with you. I have an iPad too, and I've played with the newer iPad, and I can't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there's supposed to be a difference, but I can't tell what it is. Mine seems to be about as fast as the most recent one. So I think it's really a question of have and have not. If they don't have a tablet and you know that they like them, then that's a great gift direction.
Right. Yeah. I think the thing to do is take a look at what kind of application they might be using the tablet for. I think the iPads are very well-rounded. There's probably more applications available there than most of the other solutions, although the Android-based tablets have lots of solutions as well. And, you know, the Kindle Fires have been coming on strong as well. So if someone is primarily a reader, then maybe the Kindle might be a good solution. It's certainly a lot less expensive than
an iPad.
All right,
this is going to be, because, you know, I admit to not knowing the most about this tech world, but the Kindle, I always thought that was really just for reading books. You can do more than reading books.
They've stepped up a lot with that. So you can use it as an internet device. So you can browse the web. You can check your email. And
Text messaging.
Yeah, I think there are some applications available for it, but it is still primarily a reader.
Right. And then the Android ones are similar to the iPad?
Correct.
So the same kind of idea?
Same idea.
So what's the difference? I mean, if you're a parent going Android, iPad, Kindle, what's the difference?
Well, there is a difference.
What's the difference?
Partially, I think the interface, I mean, learning how to use it, is the same. It's just tapping on little pictures.
Right.
But in my experience, the Androids, I don't know if I should say this because it sounds like I'm endorsing them, but they tend to be a lot more reliable than certain other devices made by a company whose products fall off of trees. Now, here's the thing, though. It really you made an important point in saying you need to take a look at what application they're going to run.
Correct.
Because, and I think that is the key point, really. I can't underscore that enough. If the person that you're buying that device for is a gamer, and you know that 90% of what they do on it is going to be games and web surfing, then I would say an iPad, when the larger the better.
Right.
But if the person that you're buying the app for instance, or I'm sorry, the tablet for is a hobbyist who likes to do things like remote control and photography, then the Android devices, because they have a larger support market for their apps. So that you can do more on them. But that's basically the difference.
Right. Right.
And I would also look at what sort of platform the user has is for their other devices. You know, if they're in a Windows world, then either device is going to be fine. But if they're already in the Apple world, you know, there's that integration that Apple devices have with each other.
Yeah, making them all talk to each other.
Right.
All right. So games and apps for tablets and phones also can be great gifts. Are there any out there that you find particularly useful or fun?
How much time do we have?
Yeah.
Well, give me a few.
Angry Birds Star Wars.
Angry Birds Star Wars. Oh, my
I'm
nephew
addicted.
Loves that. Yeah.
I'm addicted.
Yeah. I you know what? I love Star Wars, but I don't like Angry Birds Star Wars.
No?
No. I don't know why.
I think our generation grew up with Luke Skywalker and lightsabers, so yeah. No.
Yeah, I'm not a gamer on the iPad, I admit. You know, I like applications that help me you know, figure things out. We're renovating our house, and so there have been some applications. Like there's an application called Houzz, Houzz, that gives you all kinds of access and ideas to information about renovation. Mm. So that's been where a lot of my time has been occupied lately.
Yeah, I have an app that I got from a friend of mine, and I can't remember, but it's, you basically can take a picture. Like you're out to dinner and you have this wine, you take a picture, it'll tell you where you can find the wine, what it retails for. I mean, it'll tell you all about it.
Right.
So you know how you usually go, I'm going to remember that. And of course, we never remember. You go, what's that wine?
Sure.
I'll tell you, I do play I play Words with Friends and Word Chums. Those are my two word games. So I'm into the word games. But yeah, there's a lot. But there's a lot to choose. I mean, you go into that app store and it's like a million things to choose from. I mean, it's overwhelming.
Well, everyone can make an app. And I think they have.
Yeah. All right. So as we mentioned earlier, so much of technology has now connected us to the Internet. And the new home technology is a perfect example. Bert, explain some of the ways technology is making our homes smarter and more energy efficient.
Sure. Well, there's a trend out there that's called the Internet of Things. And the Internet of Things is where various devices are connected to the Internet. And a couple of examples, there's a company called Nest. And they make two very cool products. The first one they made was the Nest thermostat. And it's more than just a thermostat that you can control with your smartphone. And it's a learning thermostat. So as you use it, it learns your behavior and will start making suggestions for your schedule. So you go to bed at night, you turn it down. You get up in the morning, you turn it up. You come home from, you leave for work, you turn it back down. You go, come back, you turn it back up. It starts to learn your patterns. And then you can take a look in your smart device and see what those patterns are and make adjustments accordingly.
Interesting.
If you're on vacation, you can tell it to turn your heat down until you come back. When you're on your way back from the airport, you open up your smart device and set the heat back up so the house is nice and warm when you get home. Mm. It's a really great device.
You know, I'm wondering about that. Like, you know, sometimes we occasionally have power outages. You know, it might be a storm or something. And I know this has happened to us. We've been on vacation and we went, oh, it's freezing. Is the cat okay? You know, is the heat on? So this would tell you if your heat is on or not?
Yes.
Yeah. And then if it, and it would work like once the power comes back on, it would
reboot.
It would reboot. Wow.
Right. So there's another device that Nest just came out with called the Nest Protect, which is essentially a smoke detector, a smoke and carbon monoxide detector. But it's Wi-Fi based. And it's a smart device. And so it doesn't panic if you start burning the toast. if you have multiple devices in your house, multiple Nest Protects in your house, they're connected to each other via Wi-Fi. So, for example, if you do burn the toast, it'll start speaking, you know, I think I smell smoke or something like that. It won't start beeping annoyingly. And it's got a technology where you can wave at it a certain way and it will stop the alarm. Wow. So you can say, wave, oh, it's okay, got it under control, just burn the toast, and it will stop. If it does detect something that is more serious, it doesn't start with an alarm. It starts with a voice command, I'm smelling smoke in the basement, something like that. Mm-hmm. And if you have multiple devices, it can give you a location in your home of where the problem is. So if you're upstairs asleep at night and there is a fire in the basement, it will tell you that. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to make your exit through the house through the basement. Right. Not that you would if you were upstairs. But
does it connect to the fire department? Or do you have to, I mean, does it call the fire department?
I don't believe so.
It can't.
Okay, so you have to call the fire department once it tells you you've got this fire in the basement.
Yes. It can notify you if you're away if there's some sort of alarm in your house. Mm-hmm. So there's that component to it.
Yeah, I think I saw a commercial for this where the kids said they turned things, lights and things off.
And that's a different product.
Product, okay. Mm-hmm. But it's the same idea, right? Similar idea? No?
The product that the commercial is touting, Verizon's developing its own version of it. It might even have been Verizon's. I'm not sure. But basically, it's a remote control for your home. Mm-hmm. So you can have a preset settings on your smart device and turn everything off if you happen to be away from the house.
So your heat, your lights, your lock the door, all that stuff.
To whatever set
you're in. It's amazing. It's amazing what you can do remotely now, isn't it?
Yep. I think Comcast has got something in that realm as well.
Yeah. Now, the Nest's smoke detector, they weren't the first to bring a product like that to market, but they were the first to bring that product to the United States. Mm. There was an English company 5 years ago that started doing SMS-equipped Wi-Fi-based smoke detectors, although I don't think they included the gas detection in it. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was interesting, but then I saw a YouTube prank where apparently it's fairly easy to spoof email or text messages, and a man had wired his house up with these Wi-Fi-connected detectors, and his friends at work started spoofing messages from the
from his
detectors telling him that his house is on fire.
Oh, that's not funny.
No.
You're listening to The Point. We're talking about trends in technology with Chris Boutz-Faber, Cape Cod Times tech columnist, and Cape Cod Technology Council's Vice President Bert Jackson. Issues of privacy and advances in technology seem to go hand in hand, especially with the trend of tying so much to the internet. And at the same time, I imagine much of the data that's collected about our online habits and behaviors used to create smarter and more useful technology. So what are your thoughts on balancing privacy with advances in technology?
A lot of people are concerned about the privacy online. Not to change the subject, but then again, I'm also seeing companies that are doing things that are the exact opposite of worrying about privacy, and they're doing things that make you less private. Mm-hmm. And some companies seem to have this attitude that, well, why do you care? If you're not doing anything bad, why should you care whether people are aware of where you are and what you're doing? And I'm talking specifically about the geolocation mm-hmm. habits of certain servers on the internet and your smartphones. And while I think the answer is people do care, and as far as privacy goes, they care up to a point.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get to the point where you actually have to work at it and learn how to use, for instance, email encryption, they stop being as concerned, I think. Bert?
There are certainly steps that somebody can take to make themselves more aware of, you know, where their privacy is being exposed. But it is very pervasive now. Go take a look at a lens online somewhere for your camera, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. ads are popping up all the time
yeah.
for that lens. Certainly, the geolocation on your smartphone is a big issue, and there was a controversy a few months ago about people being able to track, you know, where their kids were because of the geolocation information that's stored in photographs that they're posting online.
Right.
So there's a number of things that can happen. The Tech Council actually just had a panel on privacy at the beginning of December for our first Friday. Fortunately, I missed it because mm-hmm. I wasn't here, so I can't share with you all that good information. But I think that there is an article about that online, or there will be shortly from the Tech Council. The real key thing is, you know, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware and let the user beware and educate yourselves as to where the exposures are. I agree with Chris that the geolocation aspect of things is probably one of the biggest offenders. And, you know, there's a lot of press about, you know, how the government is using our information. But we have John Landry come. He talks about, you know, the four major players in the tech market right now, which are Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google.
Mm-hmm.
They're tracking all of your information as well, and I think they're probably doing a much more effective job at it, and using it to their benefit, probably far more than the government ever will.
Yeah.
So, you know, Google is keeping track of what's going on. Facebook is tracking your behavior. Apple is tracking where you are, and Amazon knows what your buying habits are.
Yeah.
So all that information is being put out there. One of the things that John says is privacy is dead, get over it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to a degree that's true. Certainly what we talked about earlier about walking through New York and having facial recognition technology, or even in Boston, all these cameras are out there, and the facial recognition technology that can pinpoint where you are if somebody wanted to so do so. We are no longer in a private society.
Yeah, I think people would be surprised if they knew how often their picture was being taken on any given
mm-hmm.
day.
Well, I think it goes a little bit deeper than that. The problem with the devices that we carry is they know where we are
mm-hmm.
pretty much all the time. And when the government... And I know you said that the private industry has – I think they make more financial use of that data, but I'm not so sure that they make more strategic use of it, in the sense that when the government wants to know where you are, if the period of time they wanted to know where you were happened to fall between 2012 and anywhere from 5 years back, they can just troll the different servers that they have now, since they grabbed all that data from mm-hmm. Verizon and AT&T and the other phone companies, and they can pull up the towers your cell phone hit
mm-hmm.
going all the way back 5 years. So they'll know where you were on April 2nd because mm-hmm. your device knows where you were on April 2nd. But I'm not so sure that I want Google to know what particular type of caramel candy I like to eat. And there doesn't seem to be a way to stop it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're right. I mean, it's like, you know, I'll go on a site and next thing I know, you're right. You're getting all these ads. I'm like, how did they know I was looking for a pair of black shoes, you know, or whatever it might be. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Some critics of technology say it's making us lazy and dumber. They cite evidence that people are losing the ability to read maps, rely on calculators to do simple math, and no longer memorize phone numbers. But others maintain that technology is redefining intelligence. People who can keep up with technology will outsmart those who can't or don't. What are your thoughts?
I don't believe it. I don't believe any of it.
Okay.
No, seriously, I think people, I don't think that they've lost the ability. I think that they can't be bothered. There's a difference.
Yeah, can't be bothered. You're right. You're right about
I agree. I mean, I can't be bothered to haul water from the well anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm used to turning the faucet on, and that's, I mean, that is a technology that was developed quite a while ago, but it is something that we've become accustomed to. And I don't think I'm lazy because I don't haul water anymore.
Yeah, good point.
You know, technology, you know, from a memory standpoint, I think it frees you to do other things.
Absolutely.
And one of the things we were talking about earlier is I love the fact that I have Siri on my iPhone because I can just say, Siri, remind me to send a thank you card to Mindy. Mm-hmm. And it will remind me to do that. And I can let that go and move on to something else.
Okay, you have to show me how to use that. See, that's my problem. And this is, I think, Bert, this goes back to our generation, I think, is, you know, all this technology has come on. It seems so fast, even though it has been over decades now. And we're kind of, people don't really like change. You get kind of in your, you know, I'm always the one kicking and screaming with the latest technology going, no, I like my albums. And then, of course, I finally do get to move to the CDs. And, you know, now we've got the wireless, you know, Bose with it. You can go to Pandora. But it's hard, I think, for some of us who are a little bit older to kind of really, I guess, take the time to learn all this stuff. And it's changing all the time.
Sure. But remember, the albums do sound better.
They do. See, they do.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump in on you, but you brought up something. You said that you have problems with the learning curve.
Yeah.
You know that, I don't know that we're on air when we mentioned it before, but we talked about, you know, you have a problem with a piece of tech, you go to your kid because they know how it works.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But that logic actually carries out into real life. If you go to YouTube, I wander around YouTube when I'm bored, just randomly. And I ran across a young man who made a series of videos on how to program the VCR for his grandmother.
Ah.
Now, he didn't do this because he's an expert in the VCR. He did it so his grandmother, who lived in a different city, could program her VCR.
I love it.
And you see other stuff like that for using a mobile phone or how to connect with Skype. And so I'm not so sure that the learning curve is as steep as people make it out to be.
So I need to go to YouTube is what you're
saying. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, or Google.
Google.
You know, as I'm sure Chris gets this a lot, being a so-called tech person, lots of people come to me and say, Bert, how do I do this?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I don't know. And so what do? Is I Google it and then I tell them what it is. Google is a great tool. And it's the key with Google is knowing how to ask the question. But I wanted to go back to something else you said about, you know, being overwhelmed by technology. One of the things that our beautiful, you know, connected world has given us is that we are now exposed to so much. And I think that there is an information overload that's happening with us beyond technology.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to look at, you know, a myriad of successful lives, each one in its own way, and say, oh, I'm not very successful because I'm just one person. I can't do all these things that I'm seeing out there. And I think technology is the same way. Is there's all different kinds of technology that you can apply into your lives. But unless you are, you know, someone who is passionate about it or makes it their career, as, you know, Chris and I have, then there's a limited amount that you're, a limited amount that you're realistically going to be able to use because you can't learn to do everything.
Right.
So what's important to you? What are the problems that you want to solve? What are the things that are important to you? What are the things that you're passionate about?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where to pursue, you know, the technology path.
Well, I like what you said about, you know, using the phone to remind you things. I'm always trying to write myself. I have notes everywhere. Boy, if you can just put, I have to figure out how to put that in my phone.
Right.
Well, I still have like three calendars. You know, I gotta, you know, make them all match, I guess.
The problem I have with notes is then I forget to look at the notes.
Exactly, exactly. Where did I put that note? Exactly, yeah. Exactly. All right. So one of the things we haven't talked about is some of the technology that's happening in cars. We can talk to somebody on the phone and those, you know, wireless. I mean, there's all kinds of things happening, more tech in cars. What are some of the things that are happening?
Well, I was recently on vacation, and the cars that I own are getting a little long in the tooth. They're 7 and 8 years old. And I was amazed, even like from going on vacation last year to this year, what some of the changes are. You've got dashboards that are contextual in terms of the kinds of things that you're doing. It gives you information based on that. So your dashboard is basically an LCD or LED screen. And even though the speedometer looks like a speedometer, it's really like a video of a speedometer and shows you your speed. One of the cars that we rented was a Ford Edge. And you're able to shift it down into a mode where you can manually shift it. And when you do that, it shows the tachometer pops up on there, and you can do that. You can connect your devices to the car through Bluetooth, so your smartphone, not only for telephony purposes and for text messaging, because you can tell it to send a text, but also for music. So if your smartphone has music on it, you can just play your music right through there. You don't have to plug it into anything. It's great. There's all kinds of safety devices that are built into it now. Rear view cameras, detection for how far away you are from things in the front and the back.
Those rear view cameras are awesome,
right?
Yeah.
And BMW has a technology for headlights, which I think is very cool. Is that when you turn on your high beam lights on your BMW and whatever cars this is equipped with, the lights detect oncoming cars, and they create a black space in the light field so that your high beams don't shine in the eyes of the person oncoming car.
Amazing.
Well, a lot of the technology has existed for a long time. It's only now making its way into the luxury goods that we own and use. Pet peeve of mine. Look, 10 years ago, I visited Agfa, a film company in Holland. I was interviewing for a job, but that's not the point. And one of the things that they showed me that they were working on was paper video display. And they had this wonderful 12-foot-wide, 12-foot-high piece of paper that they could walk around in their hands with that was displaying a computer screen.
Wow.
And it was foldable and bendable and manipulatable and could be glued to a circular column and display ads, and it was great. And we didn't see it. It didn't appear anywhere. Well, the problem was that it was too expensive. And until they could get the price down to a point where they could actually put it in products, it wasn't going to appear on the market. And now we're just starting to see it, but it's in things like cars and in airplanes, very expensive toys.
Yeah, but as time goes on, then we'll start to see it, and will be used more and more.
And that's always been the trend with technology.
Right. All right. Cape Cod Technology Council's Vice President Bert Jackson and Chris Boots-Faber, Cape Cod Times tech columnist. Thanks for being here and bringing us up to date on the latest trends in technology. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Mindy.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vince produces The Point with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.